Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we've been having a very varied broadcast tonight, and now we got the Bitter Ender. He's been out for a while. We're really glad to have him back. We got Bitter Ender in, and we got Sister Nancy. She's hanging on, and I'm not for sure exactly what they're going to do, but I know Sister Nancy wants to talk about this. I call it an assassination. I think it was a hit, and Sister Nancy's going to tell us a little bit about that. Go ahead, Sister. I won't say another word, but you go ahead. I was going to tell them that the director of the Little Rock Airport, in my opinion, was assassinated. But go tell us all about that, Sister Nancy.
Okay, these are my notes from a video that was on that showed the brother talking. But Brian Milankowski he was an airport executive at the Clinton. The name of the airport is the Clinton Airport, named after the infamous Clintons in Little Rock, Arkansas. This happened on March the 19th. It happened, you know, some time ago. But the ATF went to the home of this airport executive at 6 o'clock in the morning, and there was actually a shootout between the ATF and the executive, who was at home, probably still in bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. They shot Brian Milankowski in the head. Of course, eventually he was taken to the hospital and died. It was an assassination, really. But the brother was on a video talking about this. It, oddly enough, even though the ATF now is required to carry body cameras, they didn't have them on. They didn't have the body cameras on. There was something from the camera that was at the home that showed these people, I guess, knocking on the door. Now, all of this has to do with an investigation over illegal sales of guns. Apparently, Brian purchased guns and would sell them at gun sales or various places, maybe where people were not required to fill out forms. But you know, it's really odd. Remember the deal with our own government was giving arms to the Mexicans? The Mexican cartels?
Yes.
Well, I wonder who went to prison or got killed over that. Well, I think a border guard got killed with one of those rifles. What kind of logic? You know, well, there is no logic anyway. The government is totally corrupt. But on the one hand, we're giving away arms to the Mexican cartels, but we kill somebody who's trying to make he's trying to make extra money by selling guns. I don't know. The brother seemed to say he didn't think his brother would be involved in anything illegal. And it's hard to imagine this man seemed to have a good-looking home and a good job. I mean, it's just another terror that they're laying on us. I mean, you know, this guy was selling guns and supposedly illegally selling guns. But again, they broke the law. The ATF broke their own law because they're supposed to be carrying body cameras, which they did not. So it's another nail in the coffin of our freedoms. And that's the way I see it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And that's the type of government we have in Washington. It's corrupt. It's vindictive. It goes after political enemies. I'm going to bet you there's something that airport director was going to blow the whistle on something that the government was doing there at the airport. Heck, who knows? Maybe the Clintons were running drugs back in there again, like they did, you know, when he was governor. He and yes. Bush Sr. were running drugs into Arkansas from down in South America, and that's well documented. So who knows? Maybe the Clintons were still running drugs in there, and they just put a hit out on this guy and had the ATF go by and do their dirty work for him. You know, it's another one of those mysterious suicides that always happened around the Clintons. You know, somebody shoots himself in the head with two different guns, or planes mysteriously fall out of the sky, and you know, there's a trail of dead bodies behind the Clintons. It's, you know, 100 miles long. So I don't trust anything that the government does in Arkansas if it relates to anything that the Clintons did, and just having the name of the airport named after the Slick Willie and the Blind Witch Project, you know, that right there puts you on a hit list for anything they want to take you out for. So I don't know. You know,
they said that that he was shot. This man Brian was shot standing right next to his wife. Well, I guess she's lucky she didn't get killed too. But I mean,
she may be in a mysterious car wreck. You better watch out.
Oh, what?
She could be in a mysterious car wreck, or she could slip and fall and bang her head 27 times on a concrete sidewalk, and, you know, that's the end of the witness there. So, you know, if it ever comes to a trial or a lawsuit. So don't be surprised at anything this corrupt, rotten government in D.C. does to its citizens. It's intimidation. You know, that we won't. They're saying, look what we did to this guy, and don't you even think about doing anything that's a protest or arming citizens so they can defend themselves against the government, anything like that. Because this is what we did to this guy, and we could do that to you in your home. You know, come at your house at 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. If they came here, I'd already be up and armed and waiting for them at 6 o'clock. I'm up way before then. So anyway, it's just another example of the corruption.
It is. Say that again. But I think Gene. We were last week. We were talking about Buddy, and his memorial service was the last that we had last Saturday. And you were missing in action. But I wanted to say that I felt that Buddy Kirtland's wife certainly deserves a lot of recognition for really sharing her husband on his ventures and his generosity, and I never met her. I did talk to her on the telephone. I don't believe that we ever crossed paths, but I just would like to say that I failed to, you know, even say anything about Pat, but I think she deserves a lot of gratitude for sharing her husband with others. Let's put it that way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sorry I missed last week when I was out on the road and wasn't able to get back in touch with y'all on all the tributes they had to Henry Buddy Kirtland. Super, super fine individual. I think that your life was better for having known Buddy Kirtland.
He was
a true Southern gentleman. He was a Confederate patriot, and he was a great, great benefactor of the Nathan Bedford Forrest Home in Chapel Hill, Tennessee. A lot of the building and construction that has gone on out there was because of Buddy Kirtland and his donations that he made. Let me give you one example of what type of person Buddy was. I've got a truck. It hit about 160 something thousand miles, and the timing chain went out. Had to have it replaced, and that ain't cheap. It's not like putting a battery in or a windshield wiper.
Got that right.
That's a big expense. So I had just mentioned that to Buddy that, first of all, I couldn't find anybody that wanted to do it, and then we're having to wait about 3 months to get the parts. And it's more than just a timing chain. It's a whole kit, different things that go in around it there. So I mentioned that to him, and he said, well, how much do you think they cost? And I told him, it's going to be this amount. He said, well, let me loan you the money. And said, it's not a gift. It's a loan, and it's payable whenever you want to. And I said, well, I can't do that. And said, no. You can pay it back when you have the money. So he loaned me the money to get this thing done. and got it fixed. And he come over to the Forrest home like he and Patsy would do a lot of times. We were sitting out on the front porch there, and I had written a check. I'd gotten the money together, and I'd written a check to pay him back, and he double-crossed me on the deal. I gave Patsy the check, and she looked at it and shook her head and gave it to Buddy, and he tore the check up. And I said, now, wait a minute. That wasn't a gift. That was a loan. That was the deal. He said, no, no, no. He said, you spend all your time driving down here from Nashville to Chapel Hill to work at the Forrest home. And that's 91 miles round trip. He said, this is a donation to the Forrest home for wearing out your truck coming down here. That's the type of person Buddy was.
God bless you, Gene. God bless Mr. Buddy. We'll be right back after this break. I'm so glad you got to say that. Be right back, folks.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, if there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people, unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Dear Blood Group Radio family, we're going to go right back to Brother Gene. I'd just like to chime in one thing. What Nancy brought up, and this is, I'm just going to make this very quick. Nancy was talking about some things that went on and down around the probably the Texas border. Back, you know, when Eric Holder was the when he was the head of the the Attorney General, the head of the Justice Department under Obama, you might remember this thing y'all called Fast and Furious that he got caught up in. What the United States government, the saintly United States government, was doing? They were walking guns across the Texas-Mexican border into Mexico. And they were giving these guns to gang leaders. Thousands of them, when they came back and they were, and the gang leaders, drug gang leaders were down there, were doing what drug gang leaders do. They were killing people. The war down there. There was, Sister Nancy mentioned there was a United States, a Texas. He was a Texas Border Patrol or Texas Sheriff's Deputy. He was killed by one of those guns that Eric Holder and company was responsible for getting across the Texas border. It was the name of that operation. When they got busted, they called it Fast and Furious. But, hey, well, we need to talk about something more important than that right now. We need to – Gene, I'm so glad. God bless you for bringing that up, Gene. I'm so glad because we missed Gene so much when we did our memorial about Mr. Buddy.
It wasn't about me. That was about Buddy, and that was the type of person he was. When he wanted to help a friend, to him, money was no object. He said, well – I had good luck on some CDs that we had this year. The bank's paying for it, Like, come on now. The bank didn't give you that money. That was your money to start out with. But that was what he wanted to do. He wanted to help his friends out. And Patsy, his wife, just is kind of person that you ever meet. She was just a sweetheart of a lady. And she was one of the most kind and endearing ladies I've ever met or had the privilege to meet and know. So it was kind of an honor to be at the Forest home and sitting out on the front porch in those rocking chairs and talking to them, because they were so smart, so intelligent, and such high-class people. And, well, I shouldn't be talking about Patsy in the past tense. She's still with us, thank goodness. But those times that we had out there were such great times. And then it was just that you're, like I said, you're a better person for knowing and being around those people, like Buddy and Patsy. And that makes you try to be a better person, just to live up to the standard, the high standard that they've set. And I'm about 20 miles behind them, but still, that's a goal you want to shoot for right there. And it's really something. And we had a great time kidding each other, Buddy and I did. He was a pilot for Southern Airways. And we were talking about, and I said, well, when I was a freshman at Georgia, they wouldn't let freshmen have cars. You had to have a car hidden off campus somewhere. And so I'd fly home for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and spring break. And I said Southern would fly from Greenville to Athens to Atlanta, and then you'd change planes in Atlanta and fly Atlanta to Huntsville, and then up to Shelbyville, Tennessee, and then up to Nashville. And he said, oh, I flew that route a lot of times. And so I was kidding him. I said, you did? Well, how come you didn't come back there to the cheap seats and say hello to us back there? Of course, that was 30 years before I met Buddy. He wouldn't know me from Adam's goat if I was on the plane. But I always kidded him. He was too important to come back, talk to people back there in the cheap seats. So we had a good time kidding each other about that. So, yeah, he was and he flew a lot after he retired. He was quite a pilot and did a lot for that Confederate Air Force, the group that restored the old planes, the old war planes, up until they changed the name of it. And they couldn't have Confederate anymore. And he said, that's it. I'm not giving any more money, not going to be a member, anything like that. So he was very, very defensive about the Confederacy and about the name Confederate and Confederate heroes and Confederate history. And he wasn't going to waste his time or his money. And I'm sure he was a big donor to that Confederate Air Force. He wasn't going to waste his time with people that would take your money and then turn around and spit in your face. So that's he had standards. He wasn't going to put up with any foolishness.
So you know, you're so right.
It was just a, you know, go ahead.
Oh, you're so right. He, I'm not trying to make him sound like he's, you know, God or anything, but he did. He made me aware of my speech. I made sure I didn't use any vulgarity. I never knew him to take a drink. Even though he may have, there's nothing wrong with that. But I never heard him say a bad word about anybody. He talked about the scoundrels and stuff, but I never heard him curse. He was his constant gentleman. And you know what? He was fiery. I have a letter here, very short, very brief letter that Mr. Buddy wrote to Governor Northrum. You know. If y'all don't mind, I'm going to read this quick letter. I never knew he had a temper like this. Miss Sister Nancy sent me this letter. Y'all just read this right quick. Like, it's dated December 2020. It says, Governor Northrum, your spineless action in removing the statue of General Robert E. Lee was so cowardly it stinks. Replacing it with a Negro girl is insane. You are an embarrassment to America, a disgrace to manhood, and the personification of why the word bastard was invented. The hottest places in hell.
Wow.
The hottest places in hell are reserved for the likes of you. He didn't hide his candle under a bushel. Ace Kirkland, 1606 Hearn, blah, blah, blah. He didn't try to hide who he was, where he was. He
no,
put
sir.
It out there where he could be. I mean, I never heard Mr. Buddy get that hot before, but I tell you, Mr. Buddy had a temper, but he told it like it was, brother. But I thought y'all would enjoy that.
And he was very adamant about defending our Confederate history and monuments and things like that. And he had no use for these cowardly politicians that cave in to the criminal element in society and let the criminals run the country. And they decide what monuments can and cannot be displayed in public. And then they turn around and go rob convenience stores and shoot people and have drive-by shootings, carjackings, and, you know, get back to their normal business after they get our monuments torn down. And then it's business as usual on the street. So,
you know, Jim, anyway. One more thing, if y'all don't mind. This Miss Nancy sent this to me, too, and Mr. Buddy made a note on the end of this. I'm going to try to do it before the break. I'm going to shut up. But this, since we're talking about Mr. Buddy, he sent this to Nancy. Nancy sent it to me. It says, the New York News Bureau, in a polling of 585 NFL football players, nearly all of them demonstrated that they were uncertain of the precise reasons they were protesting during the national anthem. Here's a sampling of responses to the questions. Why are you protesting by kneeling during the national anthem? These are these professional football players. You imagine what race most of them are. He said, here's one of them. He says, pretty sure it's against Nazis, especially the white ones. Another one said he was protesting because America becoming capitalistic instead of equal. He said, the other one said, I'm protesting.
And he's making $8 million a year, and he's protesting capitalism. Yeah.
He said, I'm protesting against Trump saying black lives don't matter. Then another guy said, I'm protesting global warming and the police. Why are you protesting by kneeling? He said, because we're showing the world what we care about. Things he says that three times, such as freedom and suppression. It's not oppression, but suppression. Another guy says, me and my fellow players are protesting the Constitution of Independence because what it does to people of color. Another pro football player said, this actually happened. We are displaying our right to stand up by kneeling for our beliefs. We're protesting Trump because he is, you know, keeping the black man down. Another one, and this guy says, myself, I'm kneeling to show that just because I'm American don't mean I got to act like one.
Go play professional football in Zimbabwe. See what kind of salary you're going to get over there.
All comments are from National Football League players with at least 4 years of American college education. Average salary $1.9 million $1,900,000 a year. And Buddy made a little note right here. He says, these educated nigger football players can do anything in the world with a football except autograph it.
Golly day.
What are you talking about? A cut, buddy. Woo-wee!
That's a good one. Can do anything but autograph it. I know they couldn't read Spalding or inflate to 10 pounds pressure on there on the ball. I know they couldn't read any of that stuff. That's upper level.
Gina, I thought you'd enjoy that. I thought our audience would. You talking about some biting wit. But Mr. Buddy had a temper.
He had great wit. And then we'd swap letters back and forth. I'd send a letter lambasting somebody on their anti-Confederate something or the stupidity in Washington. And then he'd send me a copy of something he sent in. And he was upset with the Confederate Veteran magazine because they were, had a debate going on whether we ought to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance at a Sons of Confederate Veterans meeting. And my argument was, why? They hate us. That was the enemy. And why should we pledge to the enemy's flag and one nation indivisible? Our ancestors that fought in the war were trying to get away from an indivisible nation and empire. So that's hypocrisy to stand up and say, we think that's right. And our ancestors, our family members were killed and tortured in prisoner of war camps. And, they laid their life on the line to get away from that type of suppression. So anyway, he had some great letters. I enjoyed getting those. They were fantastic.
And when we come back,
he'd send me a copy.
I got one more over here. I don't know if Nancy read this one last week or not, but we have one more and I'll shut up. But this is Mr. Buddy wrote this letter. To the Confederate veterans. Be right back, folks. Hang on your seats.
Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Tim Berg. House Speaker Mike Johnson is pushing ahead on several bills to aid U.S. allies with a separate bill for the border. The move is angering some conservatives who want to oust him over the move. They argue the border should be tied to Ukraine to force Democrats to vote for its passage. More anti-Israel protests are taking place at New York's Columbia University. Thursday, the NYPD confirmed that 114 arrests were made after the school called police. Former President Donald Trump is not happy about the gag order a judge in his hush money case imposed on him. It bars him from talking about witnesses, jurors, prosecutors, staff, court staff, and their family members. Trump saying on Friday it's his constitutional right to speak and noted others involved in the case are allowed to speak, including star witness Michael Cohen. To which former federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy tells Fox News the former president does have a point.
He's barred from speaking about people who spend basically 24/7 speaking about him.
Israel says it launched a limited strike at several sites in Iran late Thursday night. U.S. officials confirming Israel struck a number of locations inside Iran with no word yet on whether there were any casualties. Several explosions were reported near an airbase of an Iranian city, home to a number of sites linked to Iran's nuclear program. Disaster was narrowly averted at Washington Reagan National Airport on Thursday as air traffic controllers managed to keep a Southwest Airlines plane from colliding with the departing JetBlue plane.
Southwest 2937, stop.
We stopped. We were cleared to cross runway 4.
The FAA is investigating the incident. The JetBlue plane was heading to Boston while the Southwest plane was heading to Orlando. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code USA or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much. It's been a great, enjoyable broadcast tonight. We had a great guest in the first hour. We've got great co-hosts, and I'm just enjoying this immensely. So without any further ado, I think Brother the Bitter Ender did a big tour of a Confederate post, a force, I think, up in the land of the Mississippi River Valley. He's going to talk about that, but I think Sister Nancy's going to make a brief comment about one of the Confederate generals before we go to Gene. Is that right? Is that right, Nancy?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking you were going to read Buddy's letter.
Anyway, okay. Well, I was going to, but if we didn't, but I was afraid we might run out of time. I would love to read that.
Yeah.
But we might run out of time because Gene's got he went on a big tour. He's gone a couple of weeks, and so we need to get that out
there. Let's do that because this could be another time we can cover this.
That's right. That's right. That's why you decided. Well, go ahead, Bitter Ender. Tell us about that tour.
Well,
if you will.
two weeks ago, Eddie and I went over to the memorial service for Buddy at the church just south of Jonesboro, Arkansas. A beautiful service that they had there, and they invited us to stay and have supper with them. And then last week, I went on a tour over into West Tennessee. This was some friends of mine that were reenactors, and it was set up by Alan Doyle from Memphis. And he's traveled to a lot of these sites. These were Confederate forts that were built up and down the Mississippi River in 1861 and into 1862 to defend primarily the city of Memphis, but actually the whole Mississippi River to keep the Confederacy from being split apart. And if you look at a map and understand the situation that the Confederates faced out here in what they call the Western Theater of the War, in the Eastern Theater of the War, in Virginia and Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia, all of the rivers up there, pretty much other than the Shenandoah, flow from west to east and empty into Chesapeake Bay or into the Atlantic. So they're going east to west, so they actually made barriers for the Yankee Army to have to cross these rivers on their drive, you know, on to Richmond. But if you look at the map out here in the Western Theater of the War, most of the rivers run north and south, or flow north up into the Ohio or in the Mississippi, then of course flowing south into the Gulf. And all of those rivers are like daggers that point down into the heart of the Confederacy. And so they were made as easy invasion routes for the Federal Army to come into the South, into Tennessee, into Alabama, down Mississippi, into the state of Mississippi and Louisiana, and just separate the Confederacy. So the Confederates weren't stupid like we were portrayed on TV and in the movies. They knew where the invasion was coming from. So early on, they started building these forts up and down the Mississippi River to protect Memphis. And the invasion coming further south, of course, there was a Fort Randolph and the town of Randolph. It was burned by Sherman. That's where he started his policy of just burning out civilians. He unloaded about 300 Yankee troops there, and they burned every building in the little town of Randolph right there on the Mississippi River. It was later named Fort Wright. Then the further upriver from there, further north, was Fort Pillow. And then all the way up at the top of Tennessee in the northwest corner was Island Number 10. And that was a very interesting part of the state. I'd never been over there before. And that area of Tennessee, you think of Tennessee and the Smoky Mountains and all of that, the rolling hills of Tennessee. This part of Tennessee is as flat as the top of your dining room table. And it's big cotton farm up there. And this Island Number 10, if you look at a map, the Mississippi River comes down and cuts off part of western Kentucky, makes a loop down into Tennessee, and then turns back, goes north again, and makes a big turn up in Missouri, and then comes down again, headed south, and it forms the western border of Tennessee between Tennessee and Arkansas. And the Confederates built a fortification there on island out in the river. There were so many islands, they just didn't give them names. They just numbered them, island number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and this was island number 10 in the river for the steamboat captains. And so most island number 10 actually came under attack and was captured by the Yankees. But most of the rest of these other forts were simply abandoned. And the reason being that Grant and Admiral Foote and his gunboats didn't come down the Mississippi. They came down the Tennessee River, which is about 60 miles to the east of the Mississippi, or maybe further than that. But anyway, they took Fort Henry on the Tennessee River, and then they took Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River, and of course Nashville fell after that. And then Grant and his army came back over to the Tennessee and came all the way down the Tennessee River to Pittsburgh Landing, which is almost down to Alabama. So once you had a huge Yankee army sitting at Pittsburgh Landing down in that southwestern part of Tennessee there, then all of these forts up and down the Mississippi River were outflanked. And all they had to do was just turn around and march west, and they'd march into Memphis from the land side. So the Confederates never fired a shot from Randolph, from Fort Wright, from Fort Pillow. They did fight to save Island Number 10, but that failed. So without even firing a shot and all the work they'd put into 2 years of building these forts, they just had to abandon them because they were outflanked. And they did get a lot of the heavy artillery and the ammunition and the powder out of there. But it was really interesting to see how they built these. One of them, they would cut tunnels actually into the banks, and these were up on the bluffs, the Chickasaw Bluffs up and down. They called them up and down the Mississippi River. So the artillery, the heavy artillery they had up there, if the Yankee gunboats were coming, they were firing down on them. They were up that high. And whenever the Confederates had plunging fire against the Federal Navy, they pretty much wiped them out. Like at Fort Donelson, the guns were way up on the bluff over the Cumberland River there. They were firing down on the Yankee gunboats. Same thing at Drury's Bluff in Virginia on the James River south of Richmond. The guns were up on Drury's Bluff firing down on the Yankee ships, and they just beat them to pieces right there. So this would have been the same situation for all these forts up and down the Mississippi River if they'd ever used them. But once the Yankee Army got pretty much down behind them or on their flank over on the Tennessee River, then it just rendered all of this work that they'd done for the last 2 years up and down the Mississippi. It pretty much, it was an untenable position because they were going to be attacked from the rear. So they had to pull all that heavy ordnance out, the ammunition and everything. But there's still some of those parts of those forts that were left where they would actually dig into the side of some of these bluffs away from the river. And we went to one where they lined it with bricks and had an arch ceiling in it and plastered over the ceiling. And then that's where they would keep their gunpowder and their artillery shells in there because it was back behind this big mound of earth. So if the Yankees were firing at them from the river, the shells would just sail over the top of these and hit out in the woods somewhere. But it was close enough when they needed the gunpowder or the artillery shells, the artillerymen could go down there, take out what they needed, come back up, load the heavy artillery, and fire down the river. And it was interesting how they set these at the bend in a river. So when the Yankee gunboats would come down the river, they'd have to make this turn and then follow the channel right straight at the Confederate guns. So you really didn't have to be that great an artilleryman to hit your target because they were the channel was a lot narrower, more narrow back then than it is today because the Corps of Engineers hadn't dredged out everything for big barges and everything that come through there. So the channel was much more narrow than it is today. So they would almost have to line up and come straight at this Confederate artillery, heavy artillery position up on one of the bluffs, and they were just lobbing shells right down on top of it, if it had ever happened, but it never did. So, like I said, the Federal Army coming down the Tennessee River over to the east there, and once they got down as far as Pittsburgh Landing, which is almost to the Alabama state line, then they had a huge army sitting right behind them, so they had to abandon it and take out whatever they could to get out of there. Now, one of the forts that we did visit, well, we visited several of them, but one of them was Fort Pillow. And Fort Pillow was built by the Confederates and named for Gideon Pillow, who was commander of the Tennessee militia at that time. And they kept the name after it was abandoned. The Yankees kept the name of Fort Pillow after it was abandoned, and it wasn't used in the war at all up until April of 1864. And the reason it is so famous and people recognize that name is because, once again, our government lies to us, and they concocted the Fort Pillow Massacre. And I hope all of our audience is sitting down and not going to be shocked and fall and hurt themselves, but the government will lie to you. And not only will the government lie to you,
no,
but the prostitutes in the media will print stories to perpetuate the lie and keep it up. And so that's a big smear that they always use against Forrest. Well, he massacred the poor Negroes at Fort Pillow. Well, he didn't order a massacre at Fort Pillow, because anybody that knows anything at all about Forrest, he was very thorough. And if he'd ordered a massacre, they wouldn't have taken one single federal soldier, black or white, out of that fort. And they took out over 220 prisoners. Another 130 were too seriously wounded to be moved, and they left them behind. It was not a massacre. We'll explain more when we come back after the break.
We'll see you, folks, right after this break. Love that, folks.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing, and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Hey, Blood River Radio family, thank you for holding on. It's incredible. As it seems, we are almost at the end of the program. We've had another segment left. We're going to go straight back to the bitter ender. He's talking about some things I never knew here. I live in Memphis, Tennessee, and I never knew that there was a Confederate fort south of Fort Pillow. I never knew that. And Gene just got through saying why, because there was never any battles there. But because of the war, the Yankees coming down the Tennessee River instead of the Mississippi. But go ahead, Bitter Ender, finish up your our history lesson.
Well, our last segment we had mentioned there was never a battle that fought at any of these forts except Fort Pillow. And most of these forts were abandoned in 1862, and the battle at Fort Pillow was in 1864. And you go, well, why was that? The Yankees control the Mississippi River from all the way up at Cairo, Illinois, all the way down to the Gulf, because Vicksburg and Port Hudson had fallen on the Mississippi, and that pretty much shut it off to the Confederates. And then why was there a battle at Fort Pillow? Well, that was because Confederate cavalry raid by Nathan Bedford Forrest coming into West Tennessee and Western Kentucky. And the reason they went into West Tennessee and Western Kentucky was to get horses. After the Battle of Chickamauga, he criticized Braxton Bragg for his incompetence and not finishing off the Yankee Army in Chattanooga. Bragg got upset and transferred him west to the Department of Mississippi, Alabama, and Eastern Louisiana. And so Forrest spent the winter in Columbus, Mississippi, which is in northern Mississippi. And he had to start all over again and raise a brand new command, because Bragg took his soldiers, his experienced combat veterans, away from him and gave them to other cavalry officers. And so Forrest had his staff and his escort. That was about it, some of his artillery. But he had to raise a command from deserters from the Confederate Army, from these partisan guerrilla bands, and just teenagers. And in over a month, he had raised his third command of the war. And they were, he was assigned Abraham Buford's Dismounted Cavalry Division, which meant they were walking. they were infantry. So they weren't really cavalry. So the Yankees controlled West Tennessee and Western Kentucky. So he knew where he wanted to go to get horses. So on March the 1st, they came out of Columbus, Mississippi, headed north towards Jackson, which is right in the center of Western Tennessee, West Tennessee. And he and General Chalmers were leading. They were mounted, and Buford's men were following on foot. When they planned this raid, and Forrest was a premier planner, and he left nothing to detail. Before they ever left Columbus, he had scouts all over West Tennessee, and they were sending him information on where the strong points were, the Yankee defenses at Memphis, at Jackson, Union City, up at Columbus, Kentucky, and Paducah. And so he knew exactly where the Yankees were, where there were rivers that needed to be crossed, where there was a ford that you didn't have to use the bridges that the Yankees were guarding, where there were friendly civilians. So Forrest never took off on a raid, just helter-skelter, and we'll figure that out next week. He knew exactly what they were going to do when they left Columbus, when they took the first step out of there. And Fort Pillow was never once mentioned in their operational orders. So remember the date. They left on March the 1st, headed north, got up through Jackson, Trenton, captured Union City, the federal garrison there, and there wasn't a massacre at Union City because they surrendered. And they headed on up into Kentucky to Mayfield and Paducah, got horses up there, and this funny thing that happened. they couldn't take Paducah because there was a fort there and it's a Union gunboat on the river. They got some horses from the outpost and things like that and left, pulled back down toward Mayfield. And the Yankee commander there was bragging. It wasn't Forrest. It was Buford's men that had done that. They finally caught up with him. But the Yankee commander said he had whipped that braggart Forrest and driven him away in disgrace and yada, 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 and on and on and on. And they never got the horses in the big warehouse by the river on Front Street. And I guess he assumed Confederates couldn't read a newspaper. So the next night they go back. And they overpowered the guards and got all the horses out of the big warehouse by the river on Front Street. And I think they left a note that said, thank you very much for the directions. We appreciate it, and took off with the horses. So anyway, now they're coming back into Tennessee. Buford's division is remounted, and they get all the way down to Trenton, Tennessee. And on April the 4th, he sends a letter to his commanding officer dispatch to his commanding officer, Stephen D. Lee, down in Mississippi, tells how many prisoners they captured, how many miles of railroad track they'd torn up, telegraph lines they'd taken down, all the supplies they'd captured. Did not mention Fort Pillow. So they'd been on this raid for 5 weeks. Fort Pillow wasn't mentioned. On April the 6th, he sends a supplementary order or report and says, we will attend to Fort Pillow. Now, what happened in 2 days? Well, the civilians in West Tennessee asked him to do something about Fort Pillow because Yankee soldiers were coming out of the fort. They were robbing the people in West Tennessee. They were attacking people, murdering people in West Tennessee, and raping the women in West Tennessee. And the civilians asked him to do something about Fort Pillow. That's something they never tell you in the history books. They just say that they give you this image that Forrest came all the way up out of Memphis, just Mississippi, out of Mississippi there, to just attack these poor Negroes at Fort Pillow. Boo-hoo, boo-hoo, big crocodile tears. So that's why they went to Fort Pillow, to take these thugs out of there, these war criminals that were attacking the people in West Tennessee. And He came in there. They had no idea Confederate cavalry was around there. They overran the pickets before daylight on April the 12th, surrounded the fort, got everybody in place where he wanted them. This was from like daylight until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then he sent in a flag of truce and demanded their surrender. The commanding officer, Major Booth, the only one there that had any combat experience, had been shot by a sniper. They took him out early on. They were up on a ridge around the fort, firing down into the fort. It was an untenable position. The battle was over by 8 o'clock in the morning when the Confederates took the ridge around the fort. And so, but Forrest gave them a chance to surrender. They refused. The Confederates had to go over the wall, drove the Yankee soldiers, black and white, off of this plateau where the fort was and down this bluff, down to the river road, down along the Mississippi River. And most of the casualties were up on that bluff on top, because when the Yankees broke and ran, they ran through these rows of tents, and the Confederates are only like 20 or 30 yards away. They were shooting them down as they ran through, they packed into these rows of tents. They couldn't miss. And then they jumped or fell down this bluff down to the edge of the river, and that's where all the confusion and everything went on down there. Forrest finally got into the fort, ordered the flag cut down. As long as the flag was flying, that meant it hadn't surrendered. He ordered it cut down, and most of the fighting stopped then. And I wouldn't say, come here and tell you that none of the Yankee soldiers were shot after they surrendered, because what they had done to the people in West Tennessee, what they had done to some of their family members in West Tennessee, I'm sure there was some revenge taken after that, after they had gotten into that fort, and especially all the confusion down there on the river road with Confederates coming down from the north, up from the south, and firing down on top of them from the top of this bluff. There probably were some that were shot after they surrendered. I wouldn't deny that, but it wasn't an order from Forrest to do that, because, like I said, if he'd given that order, there wouldn't have been a single one of them taken out of there alive. So anyway, the Confederates pulled out that night, and then the northern press and the northern government started whipping up this story about the Fort Pillow massacre to boost up the South, the hatred of the South and the North, and editorials in the paper, and we need more recruits and we need more money, and this is what typically happens. And it goes on today. They have at the Fort Pillow State Park there, and where the remains of the fort are, they have a video they show at the park headquarters about what happened. And it's not too bad until it gets right to the end. And they've got this black character saying, well, Fort Pillow is why was the inspiration for the Nazi death camps in World War II. And I'm going, are you kidding me?
He was an NFL football player.
He must have been a football player. He played without a helmet. He got hit in the head so many times. So, you know, it's just... But that's the idiotic nonsense that people get today that don't read history, that don't understand history, and they believe 99% of the morons out there in the country today believe that nonsense.
And you can't get it out of them.
No.
It's
and that's all they ever talk about. Yeah. So anyway, we did a tour of Fort Pillow and on Saturday, and then went on up to Real Foot Lake, which is up northwest corner of Tennessee. I'd never been there before.
Oh, that's a treat.
Real Foot Lake was formed by an earthquake, the New Madrid earthquake in 1812, and that was such a powerful earthquake. If there'd been cities around there, they would have been totally wiped out, but it was at that time it was pretty much uninhabited. And they said that even like almost 200 miles away in Nashville, bricks were knocked off of chimneys in Nashville for the impact of that earthquake. And the land dropped, and the water came in and made Real Foot Lake. And they said that the Mississippi River temporarily actually flowed backwards. Instead of south, it flowed north. Yeah. So that was quite an event. And it was really impressive to see that and see Real Foot Lake. And I'll tell you a couple of funny things that happened. They have a lot of, like, fishing cabins around there.
Oh, huge fishing.
Oh, yeah. But it was, saw two bald eagles swoop down and yank a fish out of the lake. That was pretty cool to see that.
They're great fishermen. Well, Bitter Ender, I guess you hear the music. We've run completely out of time. But we'll have to pick this story up for sure next week on Confederate History Hour. So, well, thank you for coming on, Gene. I was surprised. I didn't know you were coming on. I got my dates mixed up. I won't from now on. Thank you, Sister Nancy. Thank you, Sister Monica. Thank you, Dr. Mark McDonald. Thank you, Little Dizzy, Miss Teenage America. And thank you, Blood River Radio family, for tuning in and keeping us on the air. Well, so we'll see y'all same time, same place. Next week will be the 27th. Miss Monica will be off, but Graham will be in on the second hour, God willing. See y'all. Good night.